I'm taking time to visit with State Senator Jesse Green, get a little a review of what happened during this week with the legislature. Senator, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Jim. This was a really wild week down at the Senate. We had a lot of debate, so a lot of things to talk about. I don't know what specifically you would like to talk about, but I could probably ramble on for a long time.
Well, I know that you had told us, you know, that you had second funnel coming up and you had a lot of stuff that was out on the floor. So, and it looked to me, when I'm looking at the schedule and the things like that, there was not only committee work that needed to be done, but a lot of floor debate, a lot of votes on the floor.
Well, yeah, so this week for my committees, it was kind of a dead week this week for committees. And so I started out the week in my local government committee that I chair by bringing in presenters from ISAC and the counties to just have a conversation about property taxes. And the days that we're not pushing through bills in committee, I want to take advantage of those days and make sure we have educational opportunities on some of these hot topics. But then after that, we had debate on Tuesday. Was just such a long night of debate. And for a good reason. There's just a lot of hot topics to talk about, whether that's was with administrative costs and education. We had a bill from Brad Zahn on that that a lot of people was talking about, our SNAP asset verification on that. That probably took up the bulk of the debate time. And also parental involvement in education. The governor's parental bill of rights bill that came through as well. So
do you think was your highlight of some of the floor debate that went on?
Well, honestly, Jim, like, I was a little bit disheartened. I couldn't believe some of the accusations and debate from the Democrat side. It was just absolutely incredible, some of the accusations they were making that kids are going to be starving as a result of this and whatever. And here's the reality of the situation is that in order to be eligible for SNAP benefits, in Iowa law, you must be at 160% of federal poverty level in order to qualify. That goes over and beyond federal law, which is 130%. This bill has nothing to do with income, but rather asset verification. So let's say you're somebody that doesn't make much income, but you've done a good job saving a lot of money, or maybe you inherited something or whatever, and you're sitting on $100,000 or whatever in the bank. Most people would say, well, somebody like that should not qualify for food assistance programs or whatever. And so that's what this bill gets at. And again, it does not change income eligibility for these SNAP programs. You'll hear accusations. Well, good grief, this bill is going to cause people to sell their cars and not be able to drive, and whatever. But the truth is, when it comes to vehicles and all assets, allowable assets, it's set at $15,000 worth of household assets like cars and stuff like that. It excludes one vehicle. So, you could drive a Mercedes-Benz if you want, and it even exempts another additional one that is worth $10,000 or less. So you can still drive comfortably and be able to qualify for SNAP. But that was one of the highlights to me that I just thought was a little bit ridiculous.
So just those are the things, though, that we see going on when you start getting into debate on the floor, though. That's what everybody's out there doing.
I've seen some funny things, but this ranks right up there, that's for sure.
Okay. Move that through. What else came out of the Senate that you really, that you liked?
Well, so administrative costs bill from Brad Zahn created quite a stir, but what this does is the reality is, since 1993, we have had an increase of teachers of 25%, which is not bad. But all other staff, when you look at it, has gone up 60% when you look at some of the administrative staff. And when you look at the total pot of money that the schools spend in their general fund, on average, only about a third of money schools spend is within the classroom. And so We developed a bill that would exempt small schools and rural schools of 1,000 students that have 1,000 students or less from this bill altogether. But any schools that are above that will have a cap of 5% on administrative costs a year. So there is some fear mongering that this is going to cause schools to fire bus drivers or librarians, stuff like that. And so we drew up an amendment that made it very clear that this bill does not include staff such as librarian, nurses, IT staff, transportation, custodial, nutrition, paraeducators, and et cetera. So anyway, this bill is over in the House. They'll take it up and consider it. They might change it and bounce it back. It's still got a ways to go to the governor's desk. But nevertheless, it's still live for session. And then the other one that really stood out to me on debate was the Parental Bill of Rights. You know, this is the bill that talked about how gender identity issues cannot be taught from K through sixth grade. Also, this is what some label as the book ban bill, but this doesn't ban any books. The reason for that is this bill just makes it so that a school would have to post on their website what books are available to students. Bottom line, and then it sets every school is going to have to set and post what that process looks like by which a parent can challenge a book or remove a book from a school district. So there's no book banning going on. And this bill also makes it a requirement that schools must give a civics test requirement to every student. There's 17 other states that have this. And what kind of spurred this is that we saw a survey about a year ago that showed that only 40% of U.S. adults can name all three branches of government.
Mm-hmm.
I was absolutely shocked by that, and I think we can do better than that. And so in this bill, we have it so that a student must achieve a 70% or higher score on a civics test that is given, provided by the Department of, I think it's Immigration Services from...
Yeah,
I can't remember which department provides that test, but
The immigration. I remember your predecessor, Senator Bain. That was one of the things that he had wanted. He thought was necessary, even when he was on serving in the Senate. But and I think because anybody who goes through the immigration process, they pretty much have. That's what they get is a civics test.
So we delivered on that for Jerry this week. So,
okay.
Excited about that.
All right. Okay, good. Well, those are some of the things that came up, and I know that a lot of people have different thoughts. So much of what people hear or see is, they hear little bits of it, but some of these bills have a lot of different details in them, and that's the hard part of getting to the full picture of what's being talked about and what's being done.
It is. I mean, so many of these issues are very complex, and then I have noticed that a lot of bills this year are bigger bills. The government reorganization bill, 1,600 bills, here a week before the second funnel week, we all of a sudden, if you're not on those committees, sometimes it's your first time even seeing these bills.
Sure.
Be put in front of you, and so then to try to wrap your mind so many of these different big topics, it can be a challenge for legislators, let alone the public. So I appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about it a little bit.
So I know you said earlier in the week on your committee, anyway, you had a chance to talk a little bit about property tax and some of the issues, concerns there. That is still one of the big topics that is still going down there. And so what on your side of it, what are you guys looking at in the Senate?
Well, so on the property tax side in the Senate, we are looking at not necessarily cutting property taxes right now and taking away from but that long-term curve of property taxes. We want to lower that curve from being so drastic. We rank 40th in the nation in property taxes, and we want to just make sure that it doesn't get any worse, but that it gets better. So the Senate's version gets down to the basics of gets into issues such as when bond referendums can happen, and to make sure that there's good participation with that and good communication, diversify the revenue. So like When I say that, obviously all revenues come from property, but I think we really need to get at some of the commercial and residential components. There's been a huge shift from commercial to residential in the last 10 years. This streamlines some of the levies. So, for example, Pearl is a levy that is used by the Boone School District, but there's not very many school districts that do use them. So there is some concern in Boone about that provision in the Senate's language. But the reality is the things that Pearl tax money can be used for can also be used in the SAVE levy. So I don't see why we can't get rid of Pearl and streamline that a little bit. So, but the biggest probably controversial part of the Senate's proposal is that it would enact IWIL, which would increase the sales tax a little bit. So for the communities that do not have a local option sales tax, there would be a sales tax increase in those communities. And 0.3 cents would then go to the IWIL Trust Fund, which would go towards water quality and trails and things like that. And it's estimated it would be about $240 million that would go into that. And I have issues with that. That's a lot of money going into that. I think in the Senate's version, that's probably what most people would say is the hardest pill to swallow with that one.
And that would take away sales tax, like what Boone and Boone County voters voted on back in the 80s, early 90s, to implement their own local option sales tax. That would take that away and turn it around more into getting it dispersed through the state.
Yeah, it would operate in a similar fashion to SAVE. And so some people would complain that this is a backfill and that for local officials, when you talk about backfill, there's a real hesitancy on that. They feel the state can't fulfill their promises. And I'm not going to argue if that's true or not, but nevertheless, nobody's had any problems with SAVE, and it would operate in a similar fashion to SAVE.
Yeah, no, I'm curious because I know, like, on the city side of it, they're concerned about the implications then that would, because so much gets applied to property tax reduction. So that's one of the things I know they get concerned about. How is that going to be handled? Will it be the same amount that they're getting and that sort of thing?
Yeah, and I'm so grateful to the local officials, both city and county. I've been in communication with them, and I've been open with them that me talking about property taxes is like somebody from Chicago coming out and trying to talk to us about corn and beans. Like, so I on this topic, I definitely have to rely on my local officials to guide me through this. And so there's been good communication there.
Okay, good, good. Well, what do you see coming? Well, a funnel, obviously. Now the process again has been, we got to move it off the floor, or get it out of committee and off the floor to keep it alive. What's going on with that? How does that work next week?
Oh, this is the most tense part of the session, or my time in the legislature, one for being a chairman and stuff. But if you're wanting your bill to go to the governor's desk this year, you better be in the other chamber advocating for your bill and getting it out of committee by the end of next week. If not, at least it's still available for the other chamber to debate right away next session, but there's no chance of going to the governor's desk this year. So you're seeing a lot of activity of senators and representatives going to the other chamber and having good communications about individual bills. So that's what next week looks like. I saw the debate or the calendar next week for the Senate. I don't see a debate day. So that's got a few people on edge. You know, there's a lot of bills that'll die because of that if we don't have debate. But we'll see what the Senate Majority Leader decides to do with that. So I'm really happy personally. There's only one bill left that hasn't passed out of the Senate that I think is a non-controversial bill that I would like to go into the House. But if that's the only casualty I have with my bills, I'll be pretty happy.
So you did have a couple you were going to try to revive and at least keep them around so that you could bring them back next year. Any luck with that?
Yeah, so I got a couple good bills that are flying right. It looks like they're going to fly right through the House next week and go to the governor's desk. That is in it relates to tattoo educational requirements. I've explained that before, where in Iowa, we're one of four states that requires a high school diploma to be a tattoo artist. Well, that doesn't sound too bad, but when you dig underneath the surface, you see why that's redundant. There's already other educational requirements for people to become a tattoo artist, and so when the Department of Public Health told me that they generously give waivers to people that ask for waivers, it just became apparent to me, well, then how come we don't just save the paper and save the time and get this out of code? So that bill is flying through the House. I had good conversations on that. Should go to the governor's desk. And then my other bill was for a neighbor of mine here in Boone who brought it to my attention about harassment within divorce law concerning college tuition. In code, it says that courts can or be able to order college tuition to be paid by both parents within a divorce arrangement. It doesn't sound bad. It was first put in 1970 when the divorce rate was low and college tuition was low. But since the divorce rate is high and college tuition is high now, you're seeing cases of harassment where somebody will take their spouse to court, knowing that the court will probably throw it out, but then it'll rack up those attorney fees on their spouse. And I don't think that's a healthy way to go about this. If we want to encourage college education for our youth, there's other ways to do it than within divorce law. So I've had good conversations in the House on that and a lot of good support, and I anticipate that going to the governor's desk soon.
All right, good. Well, I do appreciate you taking time, getting us updated what's going on. I did see one of the highlights is that we're starting to talk a little bit about budget, slight separation so far, but got a long ways to go on that. About a $90 million difference, the way it looks between the House and what the governor and the Senate are looking at. So we'll see how that plays out as we continue to go forward. But I know got a lot of few other things that still you guys are trying to take care of down there. So
there's about a little over a month left of session. I think we'll probably get out on time. But it's going to be a busy month. We just started our governor appointee process where we reviewed that. And, of course, the budgets are starting to talk on that. And I'm looking forward to that now being on appropriations and getting a feel for that committee. But you're right. The House and the Senate and the governor are not too far apart on these issues. So so it looks like it should be smooth sailing from here on out.
Well, we'll get there. Thanks so much for taking time visiting with us. Our guest on the program today, State Senator Jesse Green. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you, Jim.